Hello and welcome. We hope that it's familiar faces that are watching us today. And welcome specifically to Value, Virtues, Ethics and Morality. I am Magla Pillay and it is my honor and privilege to introduce to you what I hope is now a very familiar face of Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga Meditation with the Brahma Kumaris for over 40 years. We have been looking at a number of topics on this show, the format of which is Socratic dialogue, which is the process of putting questions to another to elicit a universal understanding of the truth. Sister Denise has taken us through a number of topics in which she shared her own experiences of her spiritual journey and also looks at questions that may be of interest to you. We ask that you look at your own personal life and to ask specifically whether you are the person that you would like to be. In other words, is there a difference between your own value system and the person that you are on the outside? Sister Denise has taken us through subjects like the law of karma, things like going against the current, looking at ethical values, morals and standards, what we have been taught and what we have become right now. So today's topic is of special interest to me because of Sister Denise's 40 years of experience in this particular subject, and I'd like to introduce her to you. Very, very warm welcome and thank you for joining us again.
Thank you, Magla.
So we're looking at silence and value. So, Sister Denise, on a previous show, you talked about stillness, and today you're taking us through silence. How does silence differ from stillness? Not just by definition, but by way of your own experience.
We live in a very noisy world. And there's a lot of noise in the mind as well. So people are used to noise, and silence is something people crave. But then on the other hand, when you are in a circumstance of silence, it may feel awkward, or it can feel very uncomfortable, or it can make you afraid. Because then you're just, you know, with your thoughts, and maybe you didn't even realize what kind of thoughts you think, because the world of sound and noise pulls us out of our inner self, and we're operating all on the basis of the pull of the sensory-based world, which pulls us into the outside. So silence is where you go when you go onto the inside, so your inner world. When you go inside, then you're with your mind and with your feelings. Now in Raj Yoga, we practice to detach from the body. And when you detach from the body, you detach from the sense organs. And so you're really going into a different dimension, which is a very silent dimension. When you go into silence, you become very energized. And the state of being energized itself takes you further into silence, and you start to accumulate what we call silence power. And then when you come out of that silence, you are somehow endowed with an extra energy. So we like very much to take time and go deep and deep and deep, because it's very rejuvenating and restorative, and it also helps us to actually be in connection with the deepest part of ourselves, which is the most powerful, the most beautiful, the most real.
Sister Denise, it sounds that you're speaking from a very authentic space. But my question to you is, how does one get to that space when there is so much of noise in the mind, and let alone the mind, there is so much of noise on the outside? I mean, one can shut off the television and lock oneself indoors and sit in a quiet space, but the mind is not so easy to shut off, is it? What do you do with your internal noise?
Well, I think the first thing is to go gradually from physical noisiness and just see what happens. So if you're in your room and you turn off the television, then you start to hear the fridge. Now you turn off that, then you hear the clock. Turn off that, you hear the street sounds. Go deep into the night where street sounds are pretty much at their minimum, then you start to hear creaks in the building. Now you may hear some night insects or night birds, you know. So there's just so many levels of sounds. So yogis tend to prefer the night time, where there is the least amount of physical sound and also the least amount of sound in the mind space. Now, the mind space is a kind of a dimension which is filled up with the thoughts of all the people who are thinking, which is a lot of people thinking a lot of thoughts of all sorts of different varieties. And that's a lot of noise. Very often, people will begin their journey to silence on the physical level, just to really become familiar with the different levels of physical noise and where you go to have deep physical silence. And you know, in a normal condition, there's always some noise. So if you want to have absolute silence, physical, maybe you need to go into a cave, because caves are pretty quiet. And then when you hit complete physical silence, it has a way of catapulting you into another dimension, which is the dimension of the mind. And there you start to really experience how noisy the mind is. There's so much chatter going on, and there's feelings, and there's just a lot of layers of stuff going on in the mind. Memories, phobias, distractions, some meaningless song that just won't get out of your head, or things that are very trivial, things that are very heavy, things that are very light. And the way the mind works is it will skip from one thing to another by association. And when you get into the silence, so that you're really just with your mind, and you start observing how your mind moves from one association to another, you start to observe patterns of your thinking, patterns of your being, and you start to see yourself in a very different way when you do that. And then in yoga, we want to go somewhere in particular, not just randomly becoming quieter and quieter and quieter, though you can do that. But what you want to do is to be focused. Because in Raj Yoga, you want to be able to make a focused connection with the point of light of your own soul. And once you're stable in that, which also takes you away from the physical dimension into a really incorporeal and deeply silent place, and then from there, then you want to focus on the point of light of the Supreme Being. So you have two points of light, which are very small, very fragile, very much vibrating, and you want to bring them so that they connect. That is really what yoga is. When you have that connection in silence, is then that the energy begins to pass from the Supreme Being into yourself. So then you have to kind of take from this tiny, really intensely focused point, you have to be that, and then open it out so that you arrive in almost a very large dimension which is hidden inside the point, so that the point gives way to an ocean of light, an ocean of purity, an ocean of stillness, an ocean of love. And there you find yourself kind of inside the mind of God, and you move around there exploring what is here. You feel, you touch, you sense, you begin to experience the you know, like there's a tune, a note, a frequency which is very sweet, which is very very intense, which is very purifying, and it has a vibration which, when you're connecting with it, it will alter the vibration of your own being so that you become different. And you need to be very focused but not rigid. It has to be a very gentle, unforced thing, and for that you have to keep kind of moving around that point with very pure thought. And then when that's completed, then you bring yourself gradually back, so you get a sense of moving into that and then returning back to yourself and returning back into the everyday world, but you want to bring that with you.
What is it about God that makes him so incredibly attractive to the human soul?
God is called the Beautiful One. And beauty is such a thing that when you're faced with absolute beauty, you lose yourself, because it is so extraordinary. And God is said to be the beautiful. They say the truth, be aware, the beautiful. So you come face to face with truth, which has its own resonance, a beauty which is transformative, and there is something magical that you enter into, and you're never the same again.
What do you do with the silence and that power that you accumulate from God? Do you consciously use it within the, how do you hold it, how do you preserve it in a world where there's anything but silence?
The silence takes different forms. It's an energy, yeah? The analogy is electricity. Electricity is used to make motors turn, or light, or sound, or any number of technical gadgets are powered by electricity. And so the light, the stillness, the power that you get from God translates itself into different characteristics, different powers. You may need the power of tolerance, so it will come as that. You may need patience, it will come as that. So that all these different virtues, powers, and so on, they originate in that silence power, which it's almost like a technology of the spirit. It can become this or it can become that. Whatever you need, it can become that. And you express your need in your mind. Okay, I need this now, and it comes. I need that now, and it comes. I want to be this, and you are. So that your will is fulfilled instantly by that power. And so I think that you need to become a little used to it and a little skilled in it and a little experienced in it. I remember when many years ago, when the personal computer came in, and everyone was given the suggestion, well, you need to get a computer. This is the next thing that we have to have. So, okay, everybody got a computer, but then, okay, you plug it in, you turn it on, it flashes a little A and a little colon and a little stroke, and what do you do with that, you know? And so you have to play around with it. And the Apple computers, which is what a lot of us really are using, is very user-friendly, very intuitive. So that suits the intuitive yogi very well, because then you just kind of play with it until it does what you want. And in the same way with this power, you try to feel for it and play with it and see how you can work it, and then gradually you become skilled, and then you can progress. And of course you want to always upgrade your level, intensify your way that you use that power, and you're always wanting more and more, so that you become more and more, as it were, competent as a fully empowered person.
Okay. So, Sir Denise, when one comes back to the reality of one's personality, you may love silence, because the way you described it, I mean, what's there not to love and appreciate? But you come back to your own impatience, your bad temper, your inability to manage money, your own dishonesty, and a myriad of other weaknesses. How do you use your silence to offset that? Because you can't, silence needs a space in which to be held. So how does it put right that which you have become?
If you are weak, it's because power is lacking. When you apply power where there is weakness, then there isn't weakness anymore. So this is the thing, it's about directing that power into those areas where you're weak, and you cease to be weak in those areas. But you are having to be proactive in that too, and really work with that power so that you acquire greater skill, resilience, different virtues. Things that used to be very difficult for you start becoming easy for you. You start to have the necessary energy that you need to make a shift. And so this is why you're not really using what you used to use. You know, when people try, it's like a physical effort that people are making. When you take this kind of power into yourself, it goes where it has to go. It goes where it is missing. And so you're not using the physical energy, but really a very different kind of energy, spiritual energy, which kind of knows where to go.
Mm. Okay. Are there stages of silence, levels of silence?
Oh, yes.
Do tell. Because we know there's, I don't know about the languages that you speak, but in the English language there's one word for silence, a synonym is stillness, and that's it. What do you know about silence that the average person does not know?
Well, words are created by people to refer to something that they have in common with each other, so they know what they're talking about. So I think that when you start to get deep, deep, deep into silence, you're going into spaces where other people don't go. So you're not going to come up with new words for it. But you definitely are exploring an ocean. Perhaps an analogy would be that you're going, you know, a mile down, 10 miles down, 100 miles down. Is a very different terrain when you go very, very deep. And when people dive into the actual physical ocean of water, they find things now that they didn't know existed, because they have diving machines which can go much further down than they could before. So I think similarly, when you're diving into the inner world of silence, you start to discover aspects of the spirit and aspects of God that are sort of out of range for most people. And so you go there without necessarily needing language. language is something that you use to communicate with people, but when you're going into a very deep inner space, you're more dealing with resonance and vibration and feeling, which is beyond language, and it is something very intimately personal to yourself, and is part of your inner life, so you don't need necessarily language for that. But then the poet in you might want to communicate that to someone. Mm-hmm. So there you have to find words, and that depends on your power of making analogies that work. Mm-hmm. Or invent new words.
As you speak, I'm getting a feeling of healing. What is that about?
It's very interesting, because a broken soul,
which most of us are,
definitely broken soul, broken heart.
Yes,
it's discordant.
Mm-hmm.
All the pieces are contaminated as well as broken. So this vibration of stillness that comes from God has a way of bringing all those pieces back together. They kind of come back to where they should be. They start resonating in harmony where they used to not be able to resonate at all. So something happens to the different components of your being, of your thinking, of your feeling, even also of your body. Because when you meditate at this level, it is going to alter your physical body also. You're going to become much more sensitive. Even people who are really good yogis, they can be really ill and have really damaged organs, and they can repair them with sustained practice of this kind of very pure, still, harmonic vibration.
It's hard to talk listening to you, but I'll try. Have you it's so hard to even speak listening to you, because what I'm hearing is not just, I'm just not hearing what you're saying, I'm actually feeling it, and I hope that you at home feel the same. From what I gathered, you're saying God lives in silence?
Yes.
Okay, so when you go into the realm of silence, do you also bring pieces of God back with you into your own personality?
Don't think it's really kind of pieces of God, but in my experience, God lives in bliss.
Always?
Yes.
Is permanently in a state of bliss?
Permanently in a state of bliss. I've experienced this, so I know it from that angle. And
may I interrupt?
Mm-hmm.
My understanding of God is that He's the truth. That's mm-hmm. what makes Him, I like this word, sacrosanct. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, truth has a feeling?
Well,
is truth an experience?
Truth, you have to see what do you mean by the word truth. And you can say God is true, and you can say God knows truth. And when you know truth in its totality, in the way that God knows it, you're completely at ease with it. That means from, you know, the most perfect heavenly reality to the most horrific hell reality. You've come to terms with it, you are all right with it. And then the actual state in which God exists is a state of bliss. And that is a resonance, there's a vibration that you can actually detect with your mind. And when you detect that, it's like you taste it. And when you taste it, you bring it into yourself. So rather than bringing pieces of God, you're bringing in the the resonance of that state in which God exists, and then it changes your state of existence, because people live in a state of anxiety. And when God lives in a state of bliss, there's a huge difference. And if you're a person living in a state of low-grade anxiety, which most people are, low to high grade, and then that is altered and turned into a state of bliss, even if it's just for some time, you know, that changes you completely. And then it leaves an indelible memory. So you then know that your state of anxiety is a state which is away from your real state, whereas the state of bliss that you experience when you taste that connection with God corresponds much more to your real, real original reality. And then you know where you want to go back to, because you have a reference point.
Oh, I see the clock is against us. So, is there anything that you'd like to share before we say goodbye to the audience?
Be ready to taste and take in that taste, that feeling.
Okay. That is the mind of a yogi who has been steeped in silence for 40 years. And I hope that what you take away from today's show is not just Sister Denise's words, which were profound and beautiful to the extreme, but I hope that she was able to communicate to you what she herself is feeling. And I hope that her feelings become your feelings. Sister Denise has shared, well, from what she calls the core of herself, her own spiritual journey, her own understanding of the unknown subject of silence, and the even more unknown subject of the personality of God, which she describes as being in permanent bliss. That's how I think one would know that when somebody speaks from such an authentic space, whether it's just words or whether it's actual experience. And if she can experience it, so can you. So with these words, I wish to thank Sister Denise for being kind enough to share something that's so intimate and yet so palpable in its reality, and I hope that you can find time to spend in silence and thereby increase your own value system. Thank you and goodbye.